Birds singing.
Car alarm.
Hydraulic brake.
Motorbike.
Hammering.
Hum.
Psst. Reversing siren.
Squeaking brakes.
Truck passing.
Running.
Runner's footsteps passing on brick.
Lorry.
Motorbike approaching.
Mountain bike.
Airplane passing.
Bird singing.
Bus in the distance. Car horn in the distance.
Car stereo.
Cars passing. Boy race a car with loud exhaust. Rhythmic machine.
Bus singing.
Boy race a car with loud.
Boy race a car with loud exhaust. Bus in distance.
Bus noise.
Car alarm.
Car alarm.
Car alarm.
Car passing.
Car stereo.
Car stereo.
Car.
Child talking.
Child talking.
Child talking.
Concrete pouring.
Delicate bird.
Coughing.
Coughing.
Quiet.
Coughing train.
Quiet.
Coughing.
Distant conversation.
Distant
road track.
Distant
quiet.
Cars passing.
Quiet.
Kick it.
Cripple.
Distant conversation.
Cars
passing. Cars passing.
Camera
passing.
Car horn.
Car horn in distance. Car horn in the distance. Bee buzzing around my head.
Bird call. Baby ducks
banging on stone.
Birds
singing. Bee buzzing around my head.
Bird call.
Boy racing. Baby ducks.
Boy racing. Banging on stone.
Bird singing.
Bus and
distant.
Car on. Bird
singing.
Boy race a car with loud.
Boy race a car with loud exhaust. Bus in distance.
Hello, I'm David Pryor, one half of a practice called Liminal, a partnership set up a few years ago between myself, a sound artist and composer, and the architect Francis Crow. And we set Liminal up as a way of exploring the common ground in our work, and through gallery pieces, architectural interventions, exhibition design and installations, we've been looking at why it is that sound, a central consideration in the development of public spaces for our ancestors, has in architecture with wider culture become something of a poor relation to the dominance of vision in more recent times. For the past 7 months, we've been working as lead artists on a development in the east side of Birmingham, an area still known to some as Digbeth. We've been funded by the Project Fund, jointly supported by the Commission for Architecture and the Built Environment, CABE, and Arts and Business, A and B. The idea of the fund is to involve artists in the development of the places in which we live and work, and our role is to work closely with the project architects, Kinetic, who are responsible for the master planning of the Warwick Bar site, the particular site that we're working on. Our remit at this stage isn't to create a piece of sound art or to get involved in the detail of what the buildings look like, that's some way off in the future. What we've been asked to do is simply contribute to the master planning process. That stage of the design where the architects are trying to decide what kind of buildings will go where, how tall they should be, how dense they should be, what kind of use they're intended to have, and how the private spaces they build will relate to the public spaces in their development, and then how all this relates to the existing area, its community and character. What we're going to play you now is an edited version of a sound walk we created for the Birmingham Arts Fest, a citywide festival which took place at the beginning of September this year. Visitors collected an MP3 player from the gallery run by MADE, that's Midlands Architecture and the Designed Environment, who've been coordinating our work on the project. They were then guided by the voices in their headphones on a walk that took them round the perimeter of the development site. Given our role in the project, we felt it was important to carry out some kind of preliminary survey that would introduce us both to the sound of the site as it is, and also to what this environment means to the people that live there, work there, or use it for whatever reason. So here it is, the Warwick Bar Sound Walk.
Birmingham's called the City of a Thousand Trades, or it may be more than a thousand. And you can really feel that when you're in Digbeth. Those trades are all here. And they have been here for centuries.
The area, if was obviously was agricultural at one point, and even when it ceased to be, it was an area where animals were driven through on their way up to the bull ring and the markets. So sheep, you see photographs of sheep coming up Digbeth, which is a major thoroughfare into the city now, but sheep being driven in the 1870s, 1880s up the street to the market, and cows were certainly brought to Bordesley Junction on the railway as well.
It's a bit like walking along a country lane or along by a stream, and it's so there's such a lot of wildlife. And there's so many different plants. It's so important to the city that there's these green lungs, and that the wildlife corridors, that the wildlife can connect.
Sound that to me is really representative of this part of the canal isn't a frequent sound, but is a sound that comes very occasionally when the proof house is actually decommissioning a gun, which is it still does on occasion, and they actually have to test the gun and they test fire them. They do it very early in the morning at the weekend. And the boom actually carries across the water and comes down the canal. And it's a sound I haven't heard anywhere else and probably wouldn't hear anywhere else. And the sound just kind of bounces across the water.
The Gun Barrel Proof House was established in 1813 to test guns and ammunition. Birmingham was always the primary gun-making centre in the UK because of its metal tradition and because of the skill of the workers putting the guns together. But until 1813, every gun made here had to, in theory, go down to be tested in London before it was sold. And the gun makers and Birmingham industrialists complained long and hard about this allowed middlemen to push the price up, and the money never got back to the manufacturers. So after considerable lobbying, the government agreed to the establishment of a proof house, a testing house for guns in the centre of the industry, as it were. But not quite in the centre. It was felt that you wouldn't want to have a proof house right in the middle of the industry itself, because it might be compromised in terms of the quality of the testing. So it's at a remove. The gun quarter was over the other side of town by Corporation Street, but the testing was done here, and it's still existing. I mean, it's one of Birmingham's oldest institutions, almost 200 years old now. Very heavily protected, as you can see from the size of the railings there at the back. But you can also see clues as to how the boats would unload this heavy industry into the proof house for the testing of the weapons.
Did you notice where the cross rolls?
Yeah.
There's another canal.
Really?
And you can,
it's
got... The bridge. Yeah. So here we're at the actual junction between two canals. On the left, looking down past the curve of the brick, we're onto the Birmingham and Warwick Canal.
Yeah, it goes to Camden.
Wow.
This goes to Camden?
Yep, we're now walking.
And then
to
the right, we've got the Digbeth Branch Canal, which was meant to connect up to the Birmingham Faisley Canal. Sorry about all these canals. Which would take it eventually to the River Trent. So you've got one canal that takes you to the Thames.
So the vital thing about the canals was their connectivity,
connecting up to other canals and then to rivers and so on. So here, if we headed right along the Digbeth Branch Canal, we would connect to the Birmingham and Faisley Canal, which took us to Faisley in Staffordshire.
You can reach the North Sea, you can reach the Irish Sea, the Bristol Channel,
as you followed the River Trent,
the North Sea, to the River Humber,
and the River Humber took you to
doing it about 6 days to London.
Well, the canals in Birmingham just have a completely, totally different feel from canals in like St Petersburg or Amsterdam or Venice. They've got a real urban feel about them.
But that's what I was just thinking. Look down there, that has nothing of the urban about it at all.
But it's not the same as in Amsterdam.
No, I would say they feel much more urban, because they're entirely surrounded by houses and activity and kind of bustle in a way. These feel much more rural. So is this the kind of dismounting point for the
bananas? Bananas. There are huge numbers of bananas in this area. Again, particularly from when the railway arrived. And the railway arrived in 1836 here. The original building is still standing, and bananas were brought in from the Caribbean.
And the bananas had a nice trip because they used to they'd come from the Windward Islands, so they'd be on a boat and then transported by canal up to the city.
And the British public took a liking to bananas really early and impractically, really, in terms of getting their hands on them. And so this area had lots of banana warehouses, and you can talk to old railway men who remember them, and there's one across the way from here where there was one person on spider watch all the time to spot these exotic poisonous spiders that had been shipped over along with the bananas, and they had to make sure that they didn't escape from the warehouse and go rampaging around the area.
By the banana warehouses, the stop locks. Now, I've seen loads of people look at that and think, what is it for? And they don't realise, of course, it's the boundary. Yeah, and there was a toll there. And if you wanted to go past, and that, the reason it was built was to keep the water up there and keep the water down here, not to share each other's water.
So you paid your toll depending on what you were carrying and the weight of it. So you paid more for perishable goods, and you paid less for goods like coal. But obviously you'd have an awful lot more coal on the boat, and the stop lock usually involved weighing, or at least judging how low in the water the boat sits to be able to work out a fee for the boat.
There's quite a few bats around this area. The canals are especially good. Most bats feed over water at some point during the night, during their feeding cycle. This area isn't particularly diverse in bats. It has lots of common pipistrelles. We've recorded one noctule and one other unidentified bat, which may or may not have been a Dorbenton's. So there's probably two to three species of bats in the area. Of course, bats are very silent. We can't hear them because they echolocate at a frequency which is outside of our range of hearing. So although they are actually making noise, we just can't hear them.
Let's keep walking down the towpath in the direction of
that beautifully shaped building that looks reminds me of how I'd imagine Noah's Ark, that amazing curved wall on the Fellows Morton and Clayton building.
Inside there you'd have had the horses, because of the period of horse-drawn boats, so it had stabling for 80 horses in there, and the company was wound up in 1947. Still had horse-drawn and steamboats, as well as petrol-driven ones.
But the extraordinary thing about that building is that it was built in 1935, when all over the country canals were being closed down. And yet Fellows Morton and Clayton built that enormous building. And the reason for it is actually because in Birmingham, the canals were used for traffic across the city. It wasn't just about long distance transport. Because of the way Birmingham industry worked, where you'd move a component from one place to the next to have the next process worked on it, the canals were used to do just that job. So in actual fact, the canals were viable for a long, long time in Birmingham, where they were no longer viable in other parts of the country.
I can hear the movements of a forklift truck driving around, the beep of its reversing alarm. I can hear a plane overhead. I can hear people working on the cement site in Morwick Bar itself. I can hear machines, grinding machines. I can hear cars on the road.
Bird singing.
Aircraft noise.
Aircraft.
Bird child talking.
Busing. Car stereo.
Coughing man.
And I can hear wind.
Coughing. Distant road traffic.
That buzzing noise. I don't know what it is. I don't. I'm no industrialist. I can't identify.
Hammering.
And a hammer. That's an air conditioning unit, isn't it? Is it?
Door banging.
Distant conversation.
Distant conversation.
Distant road traffic.
I like this sound here. There's a hint of wildlife. You can hear the occasional call of the birds and the ducks and so on. And there's that background Birmingham sound of metal being ground, which, long may it continue. There have been lots of jobs in it, and it's quieter than it ever used to be. But it's almost perfect West Midlands in a way, that mixture of green and grey, as it were, the metal. And everyone likes the sound of a train in the distance, as Paul Simon once sang.
Where we're standing on the bridge now, looking up to where the canal goes over the River Ray and looking up to the Warwick Bar, is a wildlife node. It's where you have five wildlife corridors meeting at this point. You have the River Ray and the canals, and the railway viaducts also very close to this point. So this whole area is considered to be very important as far as Birmingham's nature conservation strategy is concerned. As we look up towards Warwick Bar, standing on the bridge, on the right-hand side is a large piece of made-up ground, which at the other side of it is the waste transfer station.
Because it's so important to the city that there's these green lungs, and that the wildlife corridors, that the wildlife can connect, they can, the animals and the insects and the plants can go up the canals along the river into the parks.
Over time, it's actually grown into something which is quite interesting from an ecological point of view. It has lots of native trees, which have basically just happened here by accident and grown up and are starting to become quite mature. And on the other side, as you look down to the River Ray, there's a very large south-facing bank. And this is particularly good for insects because it's south-facing, it gets very sunny, insects like warmth. So on a hot summer's day, you can go down there, you can hear lots of bumblebees buzzing around, you can hear dragonflies buzzing around and many other insects which are just going around pollinating the flowers.
Crickets.
people use this bit here to either walk or cycle.
Or cruise. I mean, it's always fascinated me about Birmingham is that sense that in Manchester, which is the other kind of comparable city, the canal is famous for cruising. It's just absolutely... I mean, Canal Street is the gay area, and just beyond that is where all the kind of the gay cruising happens. And it's so much less prevalent in Birmingham, I think, than in Manchester. Because I remember, I mean, once when I went, the one time I went down, it was heaving like a nightclub. It was just so busy. And I don't imagine it's ever like that in Birmingham. So, weirdly, and I'm sure it's terribly inappropriate, but I think it's actually not a bad thing that there is these kind of urban wild spaces where slightly wild things happen.
There's such a lot of wildlife. There's so many different plants. That's goldenrod, that's another garden plant. Although that one could have self-seeded. I really like plants, and I've spotted lots and lots of wild flowers. There's one little area where somebody's scattered some seeds that you'd normally find in a garden. I think they've deliberately planted things like marigolds, because that's probably where they have their lunch, probably where they eat their sandwiches.
Well, I grow a lot of wildflowers, so when they've seeded, because I grow them in pots, I always feel guilty about their seeds being wasted, so I collect the seeds and then I go and scatter them over by the... along the towpath and by the side of the ray. But there are also a lot of garden escapees.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what plants are, because it was last year we noticed it, and I actually found some seeds, you know, still attached to the you know, somebody had bought a dried flower head and scattered them. Well, I can't remember what seeds they were. No, it's gone. I can't remember which ones they were.
is one of my favourites because it's the viaduct that goes nowhere. And it actually was going to the beautiful Duddeston railway station. And basically they got, I don't know what the polite word is, shafted by the other railway company that went to New Street because they weren't going to... New Street was going to be built and they knew New Street was going to be built. But actually, nobody said anything. So this company carried on building, investing lots of money into these railway viaducts, going to the old railway station. And then when New Street emerged, hence everything stopped, and they've never had railway lines on them. So we have these viaducts that were going to be going to Liverpool, from Liverpool to Birmingham, but in actual fact, never quite arrived. It's beautiful rowan trees up there, but that's about all. I love the rowan trees there. They're full of red berries in the autumn.
If we turn back and look back along the canal there, we can see the back of Curzon Street Station, which is one of Birmingham's Grade 1 listed buildings, the first railway station, still in its original site in the world, in fact. What you've got there is the hotel that was next to the station. So the first railway came into Birmingham in 1834, and this is the London to Birmingham line, and there was a two buildings that reflected each other at each end, the Euston Arch at London and then Curzon Street Station at this end. The Euston Arch has gone, but miraculously really, this the one at the Birmingham end has survived. So we've walked along the Warwick Canal, and we're going to leave it again now and walk up this this walkway back onto the main road.
Carting, but this whole site would have been the mill. This would have been a steel mill. It would have been so loud, especially when the mills were steam run.
And if you walk around the area on a sunny day when the batteries have got their windows open, there's an absolute cacophony of metal bashing, and the sound is absolutely terrific, and the rhythms that people set up and the cross rhythms from factories on different sides of the road are really exciting. Something I really love about that area.
the church missionaries, particularly the non-conformist groups, came in to try and improve the lifestyle and expectations of the people who lived in this area. And it was as much about countering the challenge of alcohol as anything. There were pubs around every corner and beer houses as well. And the missionaries came in to offer education, medical. There's a medical mission just up Floodgate Street here. We're standing opposite a Unitarian church and school to offer some education to the young children in the area to improve their lives. It was very patriarchal. And there was a real tug of war. Here was the Unitarians. The Congregationalists had another mission over the other side of Digbeth. And I don't know that it worked, but the area depopulated anyway in the 1930s and 40s with the building of new houses on the extremes of the city. And nowadays, I think if you look on the electoral roll, there's less than 10 people who are registered as living in this area.
Floodgate Street is another of the really, really old streets in the area. It's a medieval name. It goes back to the very oldest maps. And of course, it was called Floodgate Street because it had floodgates on it. But nicely, before it was called Floodgate Street, it was called Watery Lane, because before it had the floodgates, it just used to flood.
We're in Faisley Street, which is named after the Birmingham and Faisley Canal. We've got River Street across there. There's Ray Street. There's Floodgate Street, Mill Street, even a Water Street. And in addition to the rivers and the canals, it was also an area with a lot of springs and artesian wells. So Birmingham's water supply, before they got it from Wales, came from wells dug and drilled in this area. And the water carriers would fill up and again move into town and sell fresh water until it became polluted by industrial activity anyway. The building we're standing in front of was built as Tansley's Ice Factory.
Yeah, that's not a bond. That was an ice warehouse.
It did have an ice machine here, and it did have an ice house.
So they manufactured ice for hotels and restaurants, principally in the mid-Victorian period.
The reason for that, though, was because it had a lot of perishable goods here. That's what it dealt in mainly. And so they needed to keep them cool.
But the ice was also used by the Italian community that lived in this part of Birmingham for their ice cream.
And I mean, my granddad used to make ice cream and that. And Mum used to say, she used to have to, I mean, the hygiene of it, I suppose it wouldn't be thought of today, but Mum used to have to go down, I think she said it was Faisley Street, and get big blocks of ice and carry them on a hand cart to freeze the ice cream.
People would come down to collect the ice to make the ice cream, but the ice was here because of keeping the vegetables cool. That was the kind of original intention.
They came here, collected their ice, and then made their ice cream in the back-to-back courts that they lived in, and then touted around the city.
And then the ice cream was more or less made in the breweries, what they call the washhouse and things. But I mean, nobody had any fevers or anything like that. I mean, there was nothing better than that. Nothing better than tasting the homemade ice cream.
Yeah, that's not a bond. That was an ice warehouse.
It's called the Bond now because after its era as an ice factory, it was a bonded warehouse where alcohol was stored before the duty was paid on it.
Yeah, so he's a river.
When I was a child, there was a pub across the road.
If I had to take a sound away from this soundscape...
And they used to have a piano.
I think it would be the traffic.
And every night I'd fall asleep listening to the sounds of the piano.
I actually quite like the industrial noises. I quite like hearing people at work and the noises that they're making.
And it wasn't until much later, when I was old enough to go into pubs, that I found it was actually a pianola.
I like hearing the trains go past.
And the person that I'd thought was an amazing pianist had actually just been pedalling the pedals.
But the traffic is just a hubbub in the background that we could do without.
Listen. This programme was made using edited interviews with Marianne Hall, Anne Peruti, Dr. Chris Upton, Dr. Michael Volters, Oliver Clark, Alex Taylor, Peter Tyra, Dr. Ross O'Donovan, Nick, a passing cyclist, and an extract of an oral history interview recording made with Madeline Dixon, kindly lent by her nephew Martin Alberici. The readers were Rob Francis, Francis Crowe, Catherine Laws, Isaac Pryor and David Pryor. For more information on Liminal, go to www.liminal.org.uk.